What's up, everyone? Aaron Nagler here, Cheesehead TV. I'm talking football with Paul Brettle from Dairyland Express, the site editor and writer and a contributor for us at Cheesehead TV. Paul, how the hell are you, man?
I am doing fantastic, Aaron. Thank you for having me. Hope you're doing well.
I'm awake, man. You know, that's all we can do these days is try and keep it together as we just trudge along and hope we get to actual football. I mean, just keep my fingers crossed at this point. What's been your impression so far of, obviously it was a very weird off season. Now we've got football people talking football stuff. We don't have guys on the field yet, but just how odd have you felt this kind of start of a, whatever this training camp is?
I mean, for me personally, it's incredibly odd. I live in the Green Bay area. So since I was a kid, going to training camp practices has been just one of the highlights of my summer and one of the things that I look forward to. I think last year I went to, gosh, maybe 8, 9, or 10 of them. Went to a lot of them. And this year, obviously not being able to go, there's just not the same, you know, buzz within the town that there normally is, the same excitement.
Sure.
So from that perspective, it's very, very different for me. And I'm sure it is for, I mean, everyone involved within the organization as well. I mean, they're not even on the practice field yet. I think LaFleur just said next Saturday, the 15th is what they're shooting for.
Saturday. Yeah, that'll be the first practice, so to speak.
Yep. And then virtual off-season programs, I mean, for the rookies coming in, it's already a difficult transition. So now with that on top of it, it's just got to be a strange and odd situation for everyone, just like this whole year has been for everybody in every facet of life.
Now, you talk about, you know, they aren't on the field yet. They're doing walkthroughs, so that's at least something, you know, or they're doing installs, what have you. What do you expect from this rookie class? Obviously, a lot was made over the offseason. A lot of people hated the draft. I'm not going to get into that because Lord knows that's been hashed all to hell. But what do you expect from, say, obviously we don't expect to see much of Jordan Love, knock on wood, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But like guys like A.J. Dillon, Saia DeGuara, how much do you think we'll see them, especially early on?
So if this was normal, a normal offseason and a normal season ahead, the only three rookies that I would expect to see playing time from would be Dillon, DeGuara, and then possibly Kamal Martin.
Right.
So Dillon, I think, of that group in this odd offseason is going to have the most impact. DeGuara, I wonder about, because if he's going to play that H-back role, you know, he's been compared to Kyle Juszczyk over in San Francisco. Yep. He does everything within that offense. I mean, he wears every sort of hat that Kyle Shanahan wants him to. And that's a difficult transition to make from.
Right. I mean, that transition just straight up with the tight end
absolutely.
Is one of the most difficult in the league. But then to throw all those additional responsibilities like you're talking about, that is a jump, no doubt.
Yeah, like you said, rookie tight ends we rarely see make a big impact. I mean, last year everyone was gushing over TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant. And, you know, they had – but it's normal that because it is a difficult transition. You have to be able to know the blocking responsibilities like a lineman, route trees, all that stuff like a receiver. And so DeGuara has to know that, but also coming out of the backfield, there's just a ton that he has to know. And a part of me thinks that's why they went and got that John Lovett. You know, he's only been in the league an extra year. But that's an extra year of experience. And I know he was on injured reserve for it, but that's still practices. That's still being in meeting rooms.
Well, you know, it's that Swiss Army knife kind of guy, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, LaFleur talked about it at a touchdown in a little bit today. I mean, that you're going to be able as an offensive coordinator to use in a lot of different situations and scenarios. And hell, he's even been a quarterback now. He's obviously much more about running with the football in his hand at this point, but I mean, you could throw some kind of wrinkle in there where you have him throwing a pass. I mean, it's interesting. That's a really interesting type of player for them to go and get.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So out of that group, so DeGuara was someone that I was really excited to see this season, and we're still going to see him, but I just don't think it's going to be in the same capacity that it would be under normal circumstances. And even under normal circumstances, this is something that he gets eased into. So I could see people being upset. You know, they spent the third round.
Oh, they're going to be upset. Like you know it. That. You know yeah. That's coming. Like, you know,
and then it's like, we're going to be like, getting in the game.
It's going to be October, and people are going to be like, oh, we wasted that draft pick. You know, that's coming.
Exactly.
that check is in the mail, no doubt.
Yeah. So out of that group, I think A.J. Dillon has the easiest transition out of those two. And Kamal Martin, a lot of promise there. I like him a lot, but still has to show that he can, you know, Kirksey's going to be linebacker one, show that he can jump Oren Burks, Ty Summers, who already have the experience of being in the linebacker room in the NFL.
What's your take on Burks? Because obviously it's a put up or shut up year. You can't put it any other way. And it seems that they have tried. They have put him out there, but he has not looked good when called upon, especially in the run. We know that's his weak spot. Do you expect to see any kind of development there, or do you think what we've seen is what we're going to get?
Typically, I'm a positive person, and so the optimist in me says that, yes, we're going to see some development. Now, even the optimist in me isn't expecting him to come out and be a game changer by any means. Right. But seeing the field is step one, and he hasn't been able to do that. He's been injured the first two summers. Yeah. So at camp last year, one of the practices I was at, he was covering Aaron Jones out of the backfield. There was no other responsibilities. He knew what he had to do, and you saw that flash, that athleticism, that stickiness.
Like,
that's why they drafted him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's a converted safety, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you see those athletic traits a lot on the practice field. But then when teams scheme him up, he's in trouble.
Yeah, but like you said, he's not he struggles against the run, so he's not a three-down linebacker in coverage. The responsibilities, it's almost like his rookie year, it was like everything was moving too fast, which is, I mean, that's understandable. Expected, it happens.
Right. Especially then, transitioning positionally, you know.
Yes, exactly. And then last year, it was just a lot of the same, and he just didn't see the field at all. And so my hope is that he needs a good summer. Because at this point in his career, if he starts off weeks 2, 3, 4, 5 on the sidelines, he's probably, barring injuries, probably not going to make his way out there. So this summer, and there's limited practices too, so that doesn't help him, no preseason games. So it's an uphill battle. Like I said, the optimist in me thinks, I hope there's a step forward. But even so, that step forward isn't going to be this playmaker by
a giant one.
No, right. Not at all.
I can well understand that. What do you think? We're talking about defense, talking about linebackers, what have you. A lot was made this offseason about the run defense. We all saw the catastrophe in San Francisco. And for the most part, you look at the moves or the lack of moves that Brian Gutekunst made outside, you know, he got brought in Hester, etc. But I mean, that's pretty much, that would tell me that they are counting on Mike Pettine shoring this thing up as far as either how he calls games, how he adjusts his scheme, what have you. What do you think he does to try and, like, and look, Kenny Clark said it, like, there were stretches where they actually, you know, were pretty damn good against the run. But they weren't very long stretches. They certainly weren't dominant stretches. And when it got bad, it got real bad. So what do you think Pettine can do or does to try and just, you know, stop the bleeding, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to run a lot of dime like they already do. I don't think there's going to be any sort of shift that way. Right. He did mention earlier this offseason that in this require, they're banking on internal development for the most part, but Rashawn Gary, he said he wants to get out there on early downs because he did a really nice job of sealing the edge, stopping those runs from the outside. Also mentioned putting him more in the middle. Saw them do that with Zadarius as well. But I think a lot of it is just internal development is what they're banking on. I don't think that there's going to be any sort of drastic changes in this defense. Obviously, the hope is if Kirksey can stay healthy and regain some of that pass form, I see that being an upgrade over Martinez. Getting Raven Green back.
That's one of the most underrated kind of losses they had early on last year, because you watch those first three games, and they're actually pretty good. And then Raven goes down, and it really falls apart.
So I think it's just a combination of Kirksey coming in, development with Kiki, Rashawn Gary. Hopefully Dean Lowry can, you know, get some of that consistency back. Raven Green's returning. I think they're just banking on those elements more. I don't expect, you know, the six DBs that Pettine loves to run with, you know, them decreasing that. I think that's what
his thing,
he does.
Right?
It is.
Man, don't get me started. You know, you follow me on Twitter. Don't get me started. All right, let's switch it back over to the offense. We were talking about the rookies. We were talking about the possibility of A.J. Dillon kind of getting some time, at least early on. How do you think that split works? How do you think they go about? Because obviously they have an outstanding tandem in Jones and Williams. How on earth do they try and insert A.J. Dillon without ruining that chemistry and that kind of, just a really good kind of 1-2 punch they had last year?
I think that as much as I love Jamal Williams, I think that A.J. Dillon, if he progresses eventually, we know Aaron Jones is RB1. That's not in question. Right, but I think A.J. Dillon, in could overtake Jamal Williams in snaps. They didn't spend a 60-second pick on a running back to sit on the sidelines. That's my logic behind it. Mm-hmm. Jamal Williams, and AJ Dillon, he has more of that explosiveness. You know, Williams is an all-around solid back, but he doesn't have that burst. So I think with AJ Dillon in the backfield, that also allows LaFleur to use Aaron Jones more in the slot or out wide in the passing game, getting him involved. Yep. And then also, we're just going to see more two running back sets. We already saw way more last year than we did under the McCarthy era.
Oh my gosh, so yeah,
that's just the way that they're going. So it's Jones, obviously, and then I think Dillon and Williams are going to be, you know, it's an odd offseason, like we said. Williams might get the RB2 snaps to start, but I think Dillon's
going to work his way.
Yeah,
that makes sense. You know, these guys can't do anything without the guys up front. Obviously, we all know that kind of three from the left are set, right? We've got Bakhtiari, they got Jenkins, and then they got Lindsley. So it was interesting to hear, because I asked LaFleur about the possibility of Lane Taylor getting a chance to compete for his job, and he opened that up to, well, it's competition all along the line. Well, I don't really see how Bakhtiari, Jenkins, or Lindsley are up for competition. So you have to think that means, despite the fact that they went and signed Rick Wagner in free agency, there's going to be some mixing and matching. And one of the things about camp that I'm really excited to kind of see play out is who gets what snaps where at right guard and right tackle. I'm interested what you think, how you think that might shake out after their, you know, 12, 14 days of camp.
I've been very adamant all offseason that Lane Taylor is by no means the assumed backup at the guard position.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
He is going to push Turner, and I wouldn't be surprised if he overtakes him. You know, Taylor's best stretch is better than what Turner's one good year was in Denver. So he has that built up. He's coming back from injury, so he still has to prove that. But I think he can absolutely overtake him. And the right tackle position, I've been vocal about, that's one of the ones that worries me the most. While during the draft, wide receiver took all the news, I could not believe that they let Brian Bulaga walk, signed a veteran Rick Wagner. I mean, I understand that to start this year, but didn't draft a tackle for the future.
Right.
I was really surprised by that. Heading into the draft, I would have bet a lot of money within the first 100 picks there was going to be a tackle selection.
Especially in a class that was, by all accounts, again, much like the wide receiver class, was touted as very deep. And you saw a number of tackles went in the first round. Mm-hmm. And it's really spoke to how deep that class was. Yet nothing, like you said. I guess I wasn't so surprised in the sense that, you know, who knows who they have an eye on down the road next year. And I know they like the versatility of their guys. And if there's one thing this personnel group has at least been given the, you know, we should at least land on the benefit of the doubt, is their ability to find guys on day three who can maybe not come out and be all pros like David Bakhtiari, but they can come in and be starters. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So in a class that saw them utilize three draft picks on day three at the offensive line positions, so to speak, and you know, they'll tell you they like guys who are versatile, who can play a lot of different positions. And you got to think they'll be looking at mostly probably interior work, but maybe one of those guys surprises and is able to kick out the tackle. And I don't think that's a plan. I think it's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm interested to see how the Rick Wagner experiment ends up working, because
they don't have anyone really behind
past
him.
Well, other than Billy Turner.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what Matt is alluding to when they're, when he's talking about competition. I do think it's going to be maybe a rotation of Wagner and Turner getting reps at right tackle. I will say this, and I'll say this here because I haven't put this out on Twitter because I really didn't really think of it in the moment. But did you notice during Corey Linsley's availability, he mentioned they were doing a walkthrough. I think Wes had asked him about Lane and having him back, whatever. And Corey said something like, oh, we were doing a walkthrough and there was a play where there was some kind of consternation or miscommunication, blah, blah, blah. And we talked it out, him and Lane. And I was like, wait a second. Does that mean Lane was running with the ones? Like, I didn't say it on the, I would have said it on the Zoom, but I don't know. That's me trying to probably make more hay than is really there. But I'm with you, man. I think Lane, as if he's healthy, and that's always a big if when these guys are coming back from injury. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, I'm very positive if, you know, he shows that he's ready physically, that he'll get a shot to start. I'm going to say
100%.
Competition is. All right, well, I've avoided it long enough. Let's talk about the fucking wide receivers. Good Lord. All right. Where do you fall in the – you just mentioned everyone thought they were going to take a wide receiver in the draft – The quarterback thought they were going to take a wide receiver in the draft. Devontae Adams said he thought they were going to take a wide receiver in the draft, and obviously they didn't. How surprised were you? And do you think they're okay with everyone they have on hand, or do you think they need to go and get reinforcements?
I was 100% surprised like everyone else, but also I think you can be in both parties. You can be surprised and even wanted a receiver. Of course I wanted one, but I think they're fine as well, and I don't think they have to go and get anybody either. Like Funchess, he, you know, in his veteran role, he would have provided stability, but with him or without him doesn't change my expectations for this team. Totally I still agree. Think they're a Super Bowl caliber team. And
I think they get – that's what – we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Okay. But yes, yes.
And then with the guys that they have, the connection between Lazard and Rodgers
is insane, right?
It is. And we assume that's only going to progress. People forget about Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Yes, his snaps dwindled. But through seven games last year, he's averaging over 20 yards, almost 20 yards per catch. He had a 99-yard game against Denver, 133 against Oakland. I don't know if it's injuries, confidence, what happened. That led to the downfall, but he's produced. And then EQ as well. And I like EQ coming in as a big slot guy for the Packers.
Well, I think it's funny you talk about Funchess. I think EQ can give them whatever they would have got from Funchess. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, they're different receivers and different guys, what have you. But anything that was quote-unquote lost with Funchess, I think is more, all right, well, now we just need EQ to step up, and EQ doesn't have a safety blanket anymore.
Right, and then the – you know, signing someone, I know Taylor Gabriel's a popular name, but he could, to me, it's kind of that, you know, it provides some stability, but he's not going to do anything or provide production that they can't get from any of the guys that they already have.
Well, and that's the other question of, so you bring him in, so now you're losing snaps for the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you cut one or two of them, who knows? But like you just said, is he playing special teams? Is he helping you there, you know? Probably not. Is an older veteran who has a history of concussions. You're not running out there on coverage or whatever. So he's pretty limited in his versatility. And in this offense, I mean, the more you look at it, it's all about the five eligibles. It doesn't have to be wide receivers.
Yes, exactly.
It can be a running back. It can be a tight end. It can be whoever has the ability to get open and or get the ball delivered to them by the quarterback via the air. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter what position they play.
That was what one of my recent Chiefs TV articles was about. Was I wrote about them keeping five receivers because the days of running four and five wide with prime Aaron Rodgers, while that's fun as hell, they're gone, people. It's a lot more two, three receivers. And when you go through DeGuara, Dillon, the running backs, tight ends, and the receivers, there's 12, 13 pass catchers that can be on the field at any time. Not receivers, but pass catchers.
Exactly.
And like you said, that's what they're going for.
It's the mixing and matching, trying to get matchups, trying to confuse defensive coordinators with what personnel they're responding with when you run those guys out into the huddle. Paul, you're an absolute legend for joining me. I got a few more questions for you. Thank you for taking the time.
I appreciate it.
To talk some football with me. Let's talk about the big one because, I mean, Jay Glazer apparently has a mailbag and got asked about the Jordan Love pick, and the internet went nuts because that's what the internet does. Or at least Twitter did, or one very specific Packers-centric part of Twitter. You know, Jay talking about, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I mean, what's not to get? They like this kid, and they think he's the future. How hard is that?
Yeah, we've seen them do it before, and it's the most important position in all of sports. We've seen the Vikings, the Lions, you know, Stafford's good, but the Bears, we've seen them fumble with the position. And if you have the opportunity to go get who you think is – the future franchise quarterback that can provide you 15 years of, you know, good to great quarterback play, you absolutely go and do it. Now, I understand, 100%. You know, I was taken a bit. I did not expect them to do that.
I didn't either.
You know, so once again, I'm in both camps. I wasn't sitting here predicting it by any means.
Right.
But if you love the guy, and that's what this is about, because it's no given that the receiver that they were going to pick was going to come in and make a difference. Now, obviously, he's going to make a – chance are he's going to make a bigger impact right in 2020 than Love is, but
zero doubt. And the thing that sucks is the one that Rodgers loved was Jefferson, who ended up with the Vikings. So now you know the Vikings are going to utilize him really well, and he's going to put up lots of numbers, and Packers fans are going to get all upset. That was the guy Rodgers wanted. I can't wait.
By all accounts, the Gutekunst had every intention to take a receiver in round one. And it started, you know, through the first, what was it, 14, 15 picks, they were all still on the board. And it's like, all right, this is going to end up well. But then there was Jefferson went, they traded up and got Ayuk, who it sounded like the Packers really liked. And now all of a sudden, Love's their only first-round grade guy left. So it's either take the future at the most important position or trade out or reach, I guess. So,
or reach, or who knows.
I think when you take a step back, because like I said, I didn't expect it and wanted a receiver, like I said, just like everybody else. When you take a step back, you can understand their thought process and why they did it. And, I mean, he's a Green Bay Packer. Got to love him no matter what. Right,
that's
people?
The thing. That's what blows my mind. It's like, he's a Packer. Get on board. Like, let's go. Here's the future. Mm-hmm. Love it up. Because you only get this kind of stretch of a couple years of not knowing what you got. Hope springs eternal. Why not embrace the hope rather than be negative and dismiss it? That's what I'll never get. All right, you talked about they're a Super Bowl contender, I believe is the word you used. Yes. Maybe Super Bowl roster, I'm not quite sure. But do you really think they are a contender? Because to me, I think they have the possibility to get to the Super Bowl. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But I've said all offseason, there's a very good possibility they are a better team with a worse record. Obviously, 13-3 is much talked about. I wouldn't be surprised if they went 10-6 or so and just snuck into the playoffs. Of course, if you get in the playoffs, that's when anything can happen. So do you really think they are a Super Bowl caliber team?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we saw them get a game away last year, and I'm going to go back to it, but internal development, that's what's going to separate them from making the Super Bowl and not, in my opinion. I think that they can – you know, get to the playoffs, win a game or two if needed. But if MVS and EQ step up, Lazard takes that step forward, Kiki, Rashawn Gary, you know, the secondary with Jerry Gray, they're young and talented, but there's still miscues that happened last year. There's a lot of that. This is a very, very talented team. I mean, you go through the quarterback, the offensive line, receivers, running backs. I mean, you go through those positions, and then obviously the Smiths, the secondary, like I mentioned, like there is a ton of talent on this team. I think this team is talented enough. They just need those younger guys, the 2018, the 2019 class specifically, to take that next step forward. And like I said, it's not a next step forward to become a playoff team. It's to get to the Super Bowl. And I don't think it's going to be easy, but it never is, obviously. But I think that obviously the potential's there. And for me, it's Super Bowl or bust this year.
You know, we got to hang out more often. I like the way you think. That's what I'm talking about. Paul Bredel from Dairyland Express. He also writes for us at Cheesehead TV. Paul, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk football with me, and we'll see you online.